from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. So sign up today and get your free audio download book. Again, that site is audibletrial.com/cinemarecall. Now, enjoy the show.
This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Cinema Recall Podcast over at thatmomentin.com. I'm your host, The Vern, and for the next several minutes, folks, I'm going to be doing my recap from the 2018 Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival. This was the 37th year that they put on this festival, representing the best of the world, and I was very fortunate to attend this fest and see some features. And this episode is basically going to be my recap of movies that I saw at this festival. Since there are a lot of features here, I'm actually going to try and do a timestamp for each of the movies that I review on this thing here. So I'm really going to try my best to put that together for you guys. But yeah, let's get going right now. The first feature that I'm going to be talking about is one called Dragonfly Eyes. Let's go ahead and we'll hear a small trailer and then I'll be back, all right? Let you know too that not every movie that I review will have a trailer. But yeah, let's do a trailer for Dragonfly Eyes, all right? Stay tuned.
This is Dragonfly. Dragonfly has 28,000 eyes, blinking 40,000 times per second. Hour by hour, checking.
Let's go back a little. These two are like dating.
Second by second, deleting.
Qingqing, I've been looking for you.
Searching, identifying.
我找啊找，就找到这里来了。他在干嘛？他肯定意识到有人会看他。哎，你看这个，那这个是不是蜻蜓？那什么呀？Scenes,
roles, characters.
在现实中无法见到蜻蜓，我会在白日梦里见。Alright,
so the premise of Dragonfly Eyes is actually kind of neat. It's really kind of creative because this director, Bing Zhu, has taken hours of security cam footage. He has constructed a narrative about this. And the narrative that he comes up with is not that great. The concept is great, but the narrative isn't that great. So the story, it starts off with this girl, and she's kind of like drunkenly walking along a pier, and she falls into a river, all right? Then it cuts to her wanting to become a nun, all right? So in my mind, I'm thinking this story is going to be her downfall about how she went from becoming a nun to falling in a river. But then it introduces this other character, because the film actually cuts back even further, at least I think it cuts back further, to when she's working at like this cow factory, and then she meets this boy, and this guy is like really all in love with her, to the point that he starts following her around everywhere and attacking customers at her other job. And soon the movie is focused on him and not the original girl, and that's what really kind of threw me off. Another thing I did not like about this movie is that at times, it'll just cut to this random montage of car accidents or violence against people, and it just didn't mesh well with the narrative. If you're going to do a story about security cam footage and doing a narrative about that, I thought it'd be more interested if you actually had it from the perspective of someone looking at it and trying to solve a mystery. You know, you have the girl who falls into the river, and you can take other security footage and try to make a mystery out of it. I think that would be kind of a cool thing, like a movie that would be set like in like a mall, and security guard witnesses a murder, and he uses the security cam footage to find clues on how to find the killer. So I think the technique is there, but it just wasn't really established well in this one. So yeah, so Dragonfly Eyes. I think I'm gonna have to give this one. I know I gave it a low score here. I think I gave it about 1 star. Yeah, I think the concept is good, but that's really it. So that's Dragonfly Eyes. The next feature that I'm going to be reviewing right now is one called Ravenous. Now, Ravenous is a zombie movie. It is basically about a group of survivors who come together to try to survive more against these zombie-like creatures. When the movie begins, it's actually kind of cool because it follows different storylines. And I thought they were going to do that throughout the whole picture. You have a story about an old man and a younger boy, and they both had to kill their families, and they had their own storyline. And then you have a storyline about this very successful businesswoman who also had to kill her family, but she's a little bit more gleeful about killing zombies, and the old man and the little boy, they're a little bit more remorse about killing zombies. And then you have another storyline about this dude and his bro, and they go around the countryside killing zombies, and then after his friend gets attacked and killed, he stumbles his way into this home, and he finds this girl chained to a bed. Everyone says that she got attacked. She just claims she was only bit by a dog, so he rescues her, and then they adopt this little girl, and I thought their story was going to be about them finding zombies. And then the guy and the girl, the woman, the little girl, they actually do find other people, and they all get together, and they find a home. They're holed up in this home. It seems to be safe, and when a few zombies attack, they decide to go out into the open, where there's even more zombies. And then at the end, it wants you to concentrate on this new character, but I never felt that she was established as being a future main character. So when that change happens and they wanted me to pay attention to her, it just kind of lost me. The gore effects are cool and all, but this is not a story that is really going to be remembered. In fact, it would have been a lot better if they kept it with the separate storylines. And then for like one scene, have them sort of like pass each other in a field or something like that. Like have them all pass each other, but they never actually meet or hang out. And then we go back to each of their separate storylines. I think I gave Ravenous a score of like, I think it was like 2 on the site. Yeah, most of the movies that I'm talking about here, you can actually read my full thoughts over at thatmomentin.com. Then that would actually be a lot better too, because I am just rambling right now about these features. So the next feature I'm going to talk about is Won't You Be My Neighbor? This is the documentary about Mr. Rogers. Let's go ahead and listen to a trailer.
A television program for children made its unauspicious debut on station WQED in Pittsburgh. Its host, Fred Rogers.
Mr. Rogers?
Yeah.
I want to tell you something.
What would you like to tell
me? I like you.
I like you, my dear. Thank you very much for telling me that.
You take all of the elements that make good television and do the exact opposite. You have Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Low production values, simple set, unlikely star. Yet, it worked.
Hello.
I've always felt that I didn't need to put on a funny hat or jump through the hoop to have a relationship.
I fully remember watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood when I was a kid. Every day before kindergarten, I'd always watch Sesame Street, and then Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And I was really just, like, impressed with watching this guy. And it's really weird, too, because Mr. Rogers is very mild-mannered. He doesn't yell or dance around or tell funny jokes. He's just this really stand-up guy. And so I was very kind of interested to see this documentary. And what surprised me most about Mr. Rogers is how kind of like wild and groundbreaking his show was, because he's doing things on the show that no other kid host does. What I really like about Mr. Rogers is the fact that he never talks down to kids. He never tries to put on a goofy face or smile or laugh, even when he does puppet voices there, it essentially is his own voice. And he doesn't have to be goofy or tell jokes. And this documentary goes into his life and about how the show got started. What I like the best about this movie is that when watching it, I got to find out that Mr. Rogers was a Republican and a conservative Christian. And most of the times, whenever I hear that someone is a conservative Christian and Republican, I'm thinking that, well, they're going to be against gay rights, and they're going to be racist, and they're just going to be just stuck in their ways, like, this is the way things are supposed to be, and that'll be us right there. But Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, I should say, has got respect for, like, everyone, and especially kids, and he appreciates differences a lot. He never pushes his beliefs and his political views on everyone. And it's really kind of odd, especially in this day and age. Like, if Mr. Rogers was made today, there would be a lot of special interest groups out there that would want to try to have him be their spokesperson, and they'd try to get him to choose a side. And I really kind of appreciated that Mr. Rogers, you know, stuck to his grounds and dealt with harsher topics. I mean, he's probably the only kid show I know that talked about death and talked about war and about divorce. There was even an episode about assassination. I mean, for God's sakes, his first episode was about the Vietnam War while the Vietnam War was going on. All right, that is just, I mean, for a kid's show, that is just mind-blowing here. I mean, right now, if you have any kids show talking about anything that's controversial, there will be focus groups talking about it, and people want to ban the show. So yeah, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood is definitely kind of a groundbreaking TV show that sadly a lot of kids will never see, and that makes me sad. I do know there are certain friends of mine who actually do play older episodes of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and I'm very thankful, and the kids do enjoy it. But yeah, it is sad that we won't get anyone kind of like that. Yeah, incredible documentary. Do go out and see this if you get a chance. I'm not quite sure of the date, and I feel like an asshole for not telling you that right now. But yeah, definitely seek it out. Won't You Be My Neighbor. I gotta give this one 5 out of 5 stars. It's really, really good. All right, so following the footsteps of one great documentary to another great documentary, I've got to recommend the film We Are Columbine. This was directed by Laura Farber, and it's the story of students and faculty members of how they survived one of the most deadliest mass shootings in history. Of course, I'm talking about the massacre that happened in Columbine in April of 1999. And the documentary shows interviews with these students and these teachers. And the students are actually inside the School of Columbine talking about what they did to survive. It goes on to what they did afterwards and how they learned to cope. When I first heard about this movie, and I saw I've been seeing stills and trailers for this, I really thought this movie was going to be all about anti-guns and how there needs to be more gun control. And yes, that is very true, but this movie doesn't focus on that. It's more of a story about how they're able to, like, overcome their fears, because when you're 14 years old and having this shit happen to you, that can really kind of mess you up psychologically. It's just about how these kids were able to overcome that and become much more stronger. And it's also about how their community came together and became a much more stronger unit. And I really enjoyed that aspect of it. Yes, I think just knowing that there was a school shooting is enough to put into your head that there should be more gun control. I don't think you really need to have someone tell you that. You should know right away that, yes, there should be more gun control. Otherwise, if there was more gun control, we would not have Parkland, Florida. That's just another rant for another time, and I apologize. But yeah, I was just really impressed with this feature, because it was all about hope and survival. And that was just a really incredible thing. I like the fact, too, that one of the students is now a teacher at Columbine. And I think that's really cool. Another student works in healthcare, and I believe one student is a hip hop artist. It's just about what these kids have done to survive, and the fact that they still like the town that they live in, and the fact that everyone can still get together and they can still love the community. Yeah, it was actually kind of tugged at my heartstrings a lot of times. So yeah, I have to give We Are Columbine 5 out of 5 stars. In fact, let's do this right now. Let's take a small break. I'll play some ads. And then when I come back, I will play you my interview with director Laura Farber. All right, stay tuned.
We'll return after these messages.
Love movies?
Love MoviePass?
Don't know what MoviePass is?
Well, you're in luck, because there's a new podcast dedicated to all things MoviePass.
The MoviePass pod is hosted by a father and son team,
Keith and Noah,
who love movies. We talk MoviePass news, advice, review movies, and a bunch of other fun stuff. We're trying to watch 100 movies in theaters in 2018 with the help of MoviePass. Will we make it? I don't know, but we're going to have fun trying. You can find the MoviePass pod on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or your favorite podcast app on both iOS and Android. Our official site is themoviepasspod.podbean.com. We also have a WordPress site where you can find all our totals, movie reviews, and other fun stuff.
Listen before Frozen and Carbonite.
Hi, I'm Nick from the Nick and Vince Podcast. I want to let you know about a new podcast I'm launching next month. It's called the St. Paul Filmcast, where each week, me and my co-host Dan will pick one classical film to review. We'll be discussing new films, modern films, new releases, and other aspects film-related. You'll find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can already find our podcast on Twitter at St. Paul Filmcast and Instagram. I hope you give us a listen. Thank you very much. And I can't
say you. Having a friend present it in an honest, genuine way is the only way that I would agree to do something like this.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us. This is being called one of the worst school shootings in our nation.
We learned to live together because we were all under the same microscope.
You were forced to grow up far too quickly. And you were denied a normal high school life.
The last time I left this classroom was the day of the shooting.
It was much more than I had ever anticipated in terms of how it was going to affect me.
They think if you're at ground zero of the event, that you're more screwed up. It didn't matter where people were, necessarily what they saw.
When you're in high school, you just want to fit in. And this is something that really made you stand out. Feeling safe, I think it had a new definition after the shooting. Just kind of doing the best you can every day.
When did it get back to normal? And I said it never did. We had to redefine what normal is.
I don't like talking about it like this. Talking about it more personally is difficult.
We can't do this on our own. But if we do it together, we can get through this.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Cinema Recall Podcast over at ThatMomentIn.com. I'm sitting now here with the director of We Are Columbine, Laura Farber. Hello, Laura. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I just finished the movie here. Very powerful movie. Now, I was going to ask you how you got involved with this movie, but I kind of know already because you were a student around there. But why did you feel like it was a good time to go back and revisit the incident that happened in Columbine?
Well, so I was a freshman at Columbine High School when the shooting happened in 1999. And, I went to school there finished out school there for 3 years, graduated in 2000. And two, and then I went to, I went away to school. I went out of state to school. I left, everybody that I knew that was there. And I had people asking me about my experience at Columbine. And then that started getting me thinking, well, what's everyone else thinking? How are they handling this? Did I go to therapy? Did I not do enough to, to try to combat some of the feelings I was feeling about Columbine? So We got our 10-year reunion card in the mail, and I thought I should go to the reunion and talk to my classmates. And I did, and I found out that none of them wanted to talk to me about Columbine. We wanted to just be together at a normal reunion. And so then I started talking to more people, and I realized that there's something here. I think there's a follow-up to what happened. Just for our own peace of mind, to say that this is our story in our own words from us, not told by the media or newspaper or anything else. And so that was really important.
So were you friends? Okay, so the kids that were featured in the movie, because it shows them 20 years later reenacting what happened during the time right there, did you know any of the principal people on screen right there before you started doing the documentary? I mean, were you friends with them before that, or did you just meet them for the first time? How did you get them involved with this, or how did you meet them to get them involved with this project?
Well, I think, you know, we all knew each other from going to school together, but I had Mr. Leyba, Kiki Leyba, he was one of my teachers, freshman and senior year at Columbine, and then the principal is the principal. But he actually, the principal gave me, you know, permission ultimately to film in the school, because that was something that wasn't allowed by people from the outside, or I mean, really in the inside. It was hard. It was a hard ask to ask them to let me in. But you know, it was my school too. I was an alumni.
Yeah.
And then one person just led to another. I knew Amy before. I knew Gus a little bit before, but I didn't know where any of like what their Columbine was like.
Okay.
Even though we were all there together, we all experienced it in our own way. I didn't know that Gus was in the science room, and we've been friends since graduation. You know,
yeah.
So I had no idea. I didn't know Jamie was in the math hall. I didn't know I couldn't remember that Amy was with me in the cafeteria that day. You know, it's just when I sat down with them, that's when I realized like this. There's something here. Like, we need to talk about this. And, oh, my God, like, I feel like I need to be in control of situations, and I need to know what to expect and what's going on. And I thought that was a character flaw. And then after talking to Amy, I realized that she's maybe the same way, too. And why is that? Is that part of, you know, that stem from Columbine, from being there? Or
yeah. Was there one person's story that hit you more, how is my spirit here? Was there a story from someone that you're interviewing that kind of just said, oh, I never realized you went through that, or something that maybe mirrored your own experience there?
Well, I would say Amy definitely mirrored my experience, and even when I would interview her, she was telling me the same story that I tell people, and that's when I realized, we're saying the same things. We focus on the same details of that day, the running, the janitor telling you to get down. It's all the same. But until I talked to Gus and Jamie and Zach, I had no idea. And each one after the other, just everything with each person would resonate with me in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think a movie like this, We Are Columbine, does with the nature of everything going rather than side now, like the parkland, everything like that? What do you want this movie to convey to people when they watch it? Are you trying to get more of like gun control? I mean, what is your...
No, I honestly want people to know, I mean, at least for these parkland kids, what this could look like in 19 years, as far as emotionally, physically. How you know, it's one thing to get up there and talk about gun control and you're angry, and I get it, and that's really important. That's part of this puzzle, and mental health is part of this puzzle. But being kind to one another and empathy and sympathy is also part of this puzzle. And so I just wanted to show, you know, like Kiki said in the film, that Columbine isn't just Columbine, an event. It's people and adults, you know, that are there.
And that's why I got the feature too, about how a lot of the people who were part of this tragedy have used that to do better things for people. You know, one person became a nurse. The really nice thing too is to see one of the students become a teacher back at the same high school and helping out students that way and making sure that everybody's still a big community. And that's the big thing I've learned about this movie, because I was like everybody else, just knew about whatever you saw on images on TV, and that all these kids were, you know, damaged, and that, you know, they're gonna go through a lot of problems, and yes, they still have, you know, issues they're working out, but they're getting a lot better. And I think a movie like this really inspires their community to kind of like just be there for each other and just know that we're out there listening. And I thank you tremendously for, you know, making this. And this is your first documentary.
Yes, it is.
I've known you like a producer for a series called How Like Weather Changed History.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do something like that. But for your first time out there doing documentary, especially on such a difficult subject matter.
Right.
You just did a really, like, an amazing job, and
you
let all of your characters on screen just be open and honest, and they were funny, and just, I really just was very impressed. And
thank you.
Where will people be able to see this?
Gosh, that's a great question. Well, for immediately, we're doing a New Hope Film Festival in Pennsylvania. And then hopefully we'll get into the Chicago International Film Festival and the Denver International Film Festival. And then hopefully, you know, secure commercial distribution so that it can get out to a wider audience.
Will you be showing this feature at community events or at, like, high schools? Because I think this is something that, you know, high schools should check out and...
100%. Yeah, that's all part of our commercial distribution plan, which is to carve out this educational release to get into universities and high schools. I don't know if, you know, anything younger would be okay, because there's some profanity in there.
Yeah, but there's like small profanity in there, but it does add a little bit more to the humor. It's kind of a tension breaker,
right.
In a way. And sometimes in movies like this, they're heavy. It's kind of nice to have moments where you know that these kids can kind of joke and that they're healing. That's just their way of, like, healing is to make, you know, jokes and things like that.
Because it's okay, yeah.
You know, it's a way, too, for them to maybe express and discuss things more than they probably haven't been able to do before.
Absolutely. Right.
Well, I want to say, Laura, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me and for seeing the film.
Yes, I strongly urge you to check out We Are Columbine. So, Laura, if our listeners want to know more about this movie, where can they go?
I would go to the film's website at www.wearecolumbinefilm.com. And they can get all their screening updates. That's where we're going to post all the screening updates, film festivals, and then, as soon as we get commercial distribution, blast it right there.
All right, well, very good. Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
Please actually go onto the site, thatmomentin.com, and read my full review of We Are Columbine. I know we did like a small little like recap for this episode, and I'm very thankful for Laura Farber for sitting down here with us. And I wanted to thank her for her time, and I hope she enjoys the rest of the fest.
Oh, I know. I'm so excited. Now I get to actually see some more films. Thank you.
Well, assume thank you, all right?
Thank you.
All right, so that's going to wrap up part one of my recap from the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Film Festival. I will be back in just a few days to wrap up the rest of the features I've seen. I still got reviews of Silicon Soul, Disobedience, Killing Jesus, Smitten, along with my interview with the writer and director of Smitten. His name is Barry Morrow. He also wrote a movie, a little known movie you may have heard about, called Rain Man, and so I'm very excited to talk to him about that. As always, you can go onto the site thatmomentin.com, and you can listen to all of our other past episodes. We share the same network with a bunch of other great podcasts, including TV Critics Sleep Bad, Game Warp, and the Asian Cinema Film Club. So definitely check out those shows. Great honor to be part of that network. Again, that's the That Moment In Network. We are on Stitcher, Podomatic, Spotify, iTunes. We're on Twitter. Our show is at cinema_recall. Email us any suggestions at cinemarecall@gmail.com. I know in our next episode, I will be telling you about future upcoming episodes, but I hope you all have a great day. Again, this is me, The Vern, signing off, and I will see you in just a few days, okay? Bye.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.